I am the Terminator. This program will kill you. It comes to kernel.
Oh, okay, okay, Arnold. Just pipe down. Now that you're not governor any longer, I guess you're trying to get back into show business. All right. Oh, I see this coming. Hey, everybody, you might want to duck for this. That, my friend, was a flyover of jet fighter planes from Lackland Air Force Base. Our guest today, Carl Robigo of Austin Energy, had requested that when we were off mic during the break. And since the Air Force Base is close by and this is radio, we can do about anything we want to do here. We arranged it for him, so I hope he appreciates it. So there's your flyover, Carl. Well, welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, energy. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get back to Carl Robigo of Austin Energy. Incidentally, he's going to be speaking at the Electric Vehicles and Personal Transportation Workshop that's going to go on March 4th and 5th at the Renaissance Hotel in Austin, and you're invited to attend if you want to. You can register at the website. It's going to be pretty interesting. Carl's going to be there, but so is David Strickland, the administrator of the National Highway Transportation Administration. But right now, before we get back to Carl, I want to step over here to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Well, I see we have successfully summoned the spirit of the fountain. Okay, oh spirit of the fountain, here is today's query. What presidential candidate of the 1980s claimed that 80% of the air pollution stemmed from hydrocarbons released by vegetables? Hydrocarbons released by vegetables was claimed to be the leading cause, 80% cause of air pollution from this presidential candidate of the 1980s. Who was he? Or she?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell the others.
Aha! Who or what presidential candidate of the 1980s claimed that 80% of the air pollution stemmed from hydrocarbons released by vegetables? If you said Ronald Reagan, you were correct. Okay, we want to get right back on the line with Carl Robigo and have him explain to us exactly why going to electric cars isn't just replacing gasoline with coal, since the electricity is generated, 50% of it is generated by coal.
We're about to go into non-attainment. In environmental, once they sort out all these new ozone rules and stuff, it's clear that Austin has had a problem, as any city does as it grows, with ground-level ozone, which, creates health problems for the young and for the elderly. It creates economic problems for development and growth because of the regulatory responses that are required in order to deal with the problem. It creates all sorts of difficulties to have bad air in your community. And one of the major and increasing, and it has been in the past, intractable problems with dealing with local air pollution has been the amount of miles and time we spend in our personal vehicles. We won't get into how urban environments develop and our use of the car. We'll save that for another day. But as long as we are going to use cars, and as long as we are going to live in the manner and the communities designs that we're in today, transforming our dependence on petroleum-based transportation to electric-based transportation is, first of all, just from a well-to-wheels efficiency, if you will, mm-hmm. is an improvement in terms of emissions, and that's worth pursuing. Second of all, it allows us to make greater use of renewable energy down the road as a source for our propulsion energy, if you will, mm-hmm. or transportation services energy. And third, it migrates our economy to something that we can locally produce as opposed to being dependent upon imports from countries that sometimes are politically unstable and other times are downright hostile. Mm-hmm. So I tend to measure things in the triple bottom line metric of sustainability, sustainable development, mm-hmm. and electric transportation is good for the environment, it's good for the economy, and it's good for our society. So I'm really excited about what we're doing in that space.
So what is Austin Energy doing to prepare then for these this million electric cars that President Obama wants to have on the streets by the year 2015? First of all, do you think that's a reasonable thing for him to expect? And second of all, how are you going to adapt?
Well, big goals. There's always experts to debate whether it's practical, and you know, with the downturn in the economy, a lot of people said, "Oh, we need to adjust that."
Mm-hmm.
I am a big supporter of leaders who have the courage to put hard-to-reach goals in front of us.
Okay, hold it there. Another applause line.
And that may be a hard-to-reach goal, but it's clearly not impossible. We have the technology, the companies have the wherewithal, and we have the economy, and would get the benefits from doing it. So I'm glad he put a number out there. I wish more of us would organize around trying to get to that number. I want my leaders to give me inspirational targets. Will we make it? It doesn't really matter, right? Because if we organize ourselves to do it, we'll start the process, and the process will move at its own pace as affected by the opportunities of the technology, the economy, and all those other factors provide.
I'm sure glad, Carl, that you provided those opportunities for the applause lines. You know, that kind of livens things up around here.
Well, okay, so now I was going to answer a little bit about what are we doing about it. I think that was the next thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here at Austin Energy, first of all, as I said earlier on, but just to remind you, we actually started this process about 5 years ago. A visionary former general manager here, a gentleman by the name of Roger Duncan, envisioned this virtuous triangle of the utility of the future, where we had a smart grid that connected smart buildings and smart electric transportation, and it was a powerful way, if you will, not to be too punny, to drive a community forward.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that electric transportation, first of all, it's something we can do, right? We can make and serve electricity. We don't have any oil wells here in Austin. So that was some way we could take local, if you will, local control and local benefit from the transportation sector. So, but they looked around and found that there weren't a lot of manufacturers making electric vehicles, and most of them were saying it's because nobody wants them.
Mm-hmm.
So we created plug-in partners and went around the country and found out that, in fact, a lot of people do want them. A lot of municipalities are thinking the same way we were. A lot of individual citizens are excited by the idea. There was a real opportunity. We presented that to the OEMs, the original equipment manufacturers, as they call them, the car makers.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, gosh, you're right. And now, you know, 5 years after we started that, we've got the Volt, the Leaf, the Tesla, lots of cars being introduced to the market, which, by the way, may not be the final version of the things we'll see. But it means that they're starting to get serious as well. Here in Austin Energy, we're now taking that. First of all, I have a saying in this business: leadership is required, and leadership is rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
We felt that if we were going to move the electric transportation sector forward, we would have to take leadership. That was Roger Duncan's vision. I'm bearing the benefits of that now. I sit in the seat where he used to sit, and we've been able to partner with recipients of stimulus grants so that we're going to get some of these electric vehicles here in Austin, as well as 100 to 200 level 2 charging stations that we're going to put up publicly around our city. That's how leadership is rewarded, because we were a Volt city. We're the smallest Volt launch city that Chevy has because of our leadership position. We'll have 70 of those vehicles running around our community, adding on to the Dodge Ram trucks that we're going to have, and the Toyota Priuses that we're going to convert by adding an additional battery, and we're going to get a lot of experience with help from the federal government for us to figure out what this new model looks like. Our program of moving electric transportation forward in Austin, then, so it started with awareness. At this stage, it's going to be on demonstration. We're going to demonstrate these vehicles, put them in use. We're going to build infrastructure, putting out our level 2 grid network, or network grid, if you will, of public charging to make customers aware that charging is available for their cars and, by the way, for their scooters and bicycles that are electrically powered. We're going to educate our customers. We're going to work with them to support their purchase of these vehicles by providing rebates for the charging stations that they install in their homes. And we're requiring that all entities that provide public charging in our service territory work with us to create universal access to all charging stations. So if you sign up with Austin Energy, you can take your swipe card to a charging station, no matter who made it or who installed it in our service territory, and use it for your car. We're working with private businesses who want to enhance their appeal to customers by having charging available in their parking lots. We're going to work with employers, put these things in public facilities. We're going to make electric charging so out there that everybody will feel comfortable and realize in their own minds that this really is a transportation option for them. We think that's our role, and they make the private decision to buy these vehicles, to install the chargers, and to participate in this transformation of our transportation sector.
Well, in just a minute, I'm going to want to ask you about the IEEE USA Energy in Motion Conference in Austin, where I understand you're a speaker. But first of all, tell us about this seminar that's going on, that you're providing leadership with, that's going on the February 22nd. I heard something about it, and I know nothing about it, but I heard it has something to do with making sure there's plenty of charging stations along the NAFTA highway, along the I-35 corridor. Am I correct in that?
It's a continuation of a process that we also started. Again, we felt like it was our job to take leadership in making this happen. We knew that this would be here in Austin. We sit about the middle of what we call the I-35 corridor in mm-hmm. Texas. It technically extends. Generally, people think of it as from Dallas all the way down to Laredo, mm-hmm. down at the border. Right here around Austin, south of us is the giant city of San Antonio, mm-hmm. and extending north, the city of Georgetown. Right here, we have a number of public power entities who provide electric service. And we've convened a group of them from San Antonio to Georgetown in what we call the I-35 corridor group mm-hmm. to start working on just communicating, sharing information, making sure that we're aware of what kind of pricing and service, addressing this access issue, because we have a lot of people who drive from San Antonio to Austin on a regular basis
sure.
for business or
yeah.
for work. It's all part of our community, and so we know that electric vehicles will enjoy faster penetration in the marketplace if it's easy for customers to take their vehicle everywhere they want to within the corridor. So it's just, we think it's our job. One of the greatest powers of government, and some people might argue the most important power of government, is the power to convene. And we're using our leadership to convene people to address these important issues and make this market happen faster. Pretty excited, asking everybody to come together, private and government sector, to start talking about how to make this stuff work.
Oh, sensational. And, of course, that's one of the biggest things to overcome is the range anxiety. Of course, Chevy Volt, you got to pay $40,000, and you don't have to have range anxiety with that one because it has gasoline also. But you take something like the Leaf or some of the other ones, somebody gets in that and drives around, wants to know that it can be charged back up again if he gets out a little ways away from home.
You're exactly right. We think that there's, you know, it's funny because I actually went through this. They didn't have the term for it back when I did it, but around the time I got out of the Army back in 1990, we were looking at diesel vehicles, and there mm-hmm. was a tax credit you could get for buying a diesel fuel vehicle in those days. And I'm sorry, it wasn't when I got out of the Army. It was when I was actually going to law school. It was many years before that, in mm-hmm. the 80s. At any rate, one of my big concerns was, would I be able to refill on diesel? You know, everybody needs to go to a truck stop, but I didn't want to have to drive out of town to get diesel fuel.
Sure.
And I remember as we were considering buying that vehicle with the diesel engine, looking around and wondering, you know, I'm going to make my wife have to go out truck stops. What am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I looked around as I drove and said, where are the gas stations that have those diesel pumps? And you know, all that stuff. That's exactly what we think customers are going to go through. They're going to say, gee, you know, here's how I live my life. How far am I away from a charger if I need it? And that's that range anxiety. What if I need to add an extra errand? Will I be stranded?
Yeah.
You know, will I have the juice to get to a refill in my tank, if you will. And in that regard, the public presence, the public charging network, we think is a big part of addressing that anxiety. It's interestingly, we're not sure that it's going to be a real problem. Most people, the statistics are pretty clear, most people don't drive far enough that they're ever going to really get in a bind in their normal day-to-day lives. And they're not likely to try to do a cross-country trip in a Leaf until they know there's a heck of a charging network out there. So they're not likely to get stranded. But it's that perception and that concern that is the initial hurdle to the buying decision, and that's what we're trying to address with this.
All right. Well, you're a keynote speaker at the IEEE USA Energy in Motion Conference in Austin. We've been giving a lot of press coverage to that because IEEE is such an outstanding organization. And what are you going to tell the engineers when you speak to them in early March?
Well, I'll start by speaking of something that they should understand well, and I would hope they'll understand better, which is a systems thinking approach to the challenge of electric transportation. That we have to understand that we don't need to just solve the question of the highest performing battery, the fastest recharge rate, or whatever. That we also have to think through all these other issues that are associated with it: sociological issues, customer perception issues, and marketing issues, regulatory issues. Competitive issues, what kind of marketplace do we want? And all of those things, as always happens for engineers, will provide the design criteria against which they will have to do their important work. Society tells us what we want, and engineers go and make it. But the more they listen to society, the better chance that the solutions they come up will fit. So a systems perspective is absolutely critical to that, and that'll be an overwhelming part of the story. I will remind them that I do believe, as I said with you earlier, that the electric transportation opportunity is not just a great opportunity for me as a utility executive or for us as a utility, but it's a great opportunity for a community in the sense of enhancing and promoting sustainable development because of the real benefits it can ultimately provide to the people, to the planet, and to business profits. Not the least of which is that opportunity, as I mentioned before, when you refill your tank with locally made electricity, which we're trying to build more and more of, you keep your money. And as a friend of mine likes to say, if you want to keep your money, you don't give it away. So there's really huge opportunities in this transformation, and if they're working on this exciting problem of changing the way we move ourselves, they're working on something that's even more far-reaching and potentially beneficial to society. Third, I will express probably some parochial views, but an important view that we do have an opportunity, but it will be challenging for us to think about balancing this fervent desire we have for a competitive, let a thousand flowers bloom kind of market environment, because we need a lot of innovation right now to get to our ultimate solutions. But at the same time, we're also going to have to figure out how do we address the issues of things like standards. No one better than IEEE to talk to about that. But how do we get to the issues of appropriate standards and appropriate sort of, operational requirements and rules so that vision of a vibrant, self-sustaining marketplace can be a reality. And then finally, I'll probably throw onto them what I think is the most important technical challenge that I can give them, which is that we, sort of simply put, we cannot tolerate dumb electric vehicles. It will be bad for the grid, it will be bad for our environment, it will be bad for society. We need to start developing a way to make these vehicles smart and solidly integrated with the smart grid opportunity, and therefore capable of delivering their real potential to us, the ultimate potential, and then not just buy electricity, but to sell it as well, and to participate in a dynamic electric market that we probably haven't even fully imagined the nature of.
You paint a very, very exciting picture, and it seems to me that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it back in 1995 that General Motors tried to come out with some sort of electric vehicle and it failed miserably? And so there is some trepidation about whether people really will adopt these electric vehicles, but the picture that you point seems that it's undoubtedly they will, and that it will be good all around for everybody when they do.
I got to ride in an EV1, and I'm not convinced that sort of what killed it was a lack of customer demand entirely, or lack of business savvy entirely, or lack of high prices for petroleum entirely. But it's usually a constellation of things. So what I really appreciate your question, because I think the key point is, if we do want this to happen now, if we do want to make this a reality, that if we do want to make a substantial dent in our reliance on petroleum for personal and commercial transportation, we're going to have to take every one of those lessons to heart, and we're going to have to use our best intellect and innovation to find the solutions. But it is not, by any stretch of the imagination, beyond our capacity to do. Most of our major problems in front of us are not problems of capacity, they are problems of commitment. And if we commit to solving these problems together, then I think this future is as realizable as a darker scenario in which we are all stuck buying, foreign oil and choking on the exhausts.
Okay, Carl, have we covered about everything that you would like to cover today? Because you sure covered the stuff I wanted to cover.
Good. Yeah, the only thing I'll say is regarding the IEEE conference that's coming up in March, it's mm-hmm. the 3rd to 6th of March here in Austin, I am probably the least important person on the agenda. There are some really bright people, some great panels who are going to address many, many of these issues in detail. They're going to talk about, there's people from charging stations, from university researchers, from economists, there are professors, there are regulators, this is as comprehensive a look that the only challenge people will have is figuring out which of the side-by-side tracks to attend, because, and maybe they should bring a friend so they can get a complete coverage, because attendees at this conference will walk away with a very comprehensive view of the issues, and I hope some of the best potential solutions in front of us.
All right. Carl Robigo, the Vice President and Distributed Energy Services for Austin Energy. It's been wonderful to have you with us today, and I want to tell you how much we all appreciate you taking out your valuable time to visit with us on these subjects.
My pleasure, Colonel. I appreciate it.
And now, we make time for the Voice of Reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I think that it is a very exciting time in Asia-Pacific, and I think that it's a great opportunity for a nation as great as the United States to pay attention to the politics, to the people and society and so on. Understand the in-depth what is happening in Asia-Pacific, and I'm almost sure that's going to come back and benefit United States in a very, very major way in the 21st century. This is Dashuan Feng, since 2007, the senior executive vice president for one of the major research universities in Taiwan named National Cheng Kung University.
So you decide, has this really been the Voice of Reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
Waiting for you.